going to call to order the Catuit Fire District Prudential Committee meeting of Monday, the 23rd of July, 2018. Could I have a roll call, please?
Ray Perone, Treasurer.
Lisa Mycock Kelly, Prudential.
Fran Parks, Prudential.
Sylvia Denau, Prudential.
Jolly Eager, Clerk.
We all stand for the Pledge of Allegiance, please. You're all set, gentlemen. We'll start off with you.
Thank you. I am Rob Lynch, and this is George Gilmore with Lynch Marini and Associates, and we completed the audit for the district. We're here tonight, and thank you for your time to present the FY17 audit. We prepared the summary overview as we've done in the past. I know I see some familiar faces, some new faces, but we have an overview of our financial report. This past year was a little challenging with the change in the personnel as well as conversion of the financial reporting system, as well as this year you had a single audit as a result of the USDA grant and loan that you received for the water tower. But with that, I'll turn it over to George and go through the overview and answer any questions you have.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. So there were three main objectives of the audit process, and they're outlined here. We expressed an opinion as to whether the financial statements were, in all material respects, presented fairly as whole in accordance with generally accepted accounting principles. In addition to that report, we also presented a report on internal control issues along with compliance of laws and regulations and other matters. This isn't necessarily putting an opinion on the internal controls of the district, it's just simply presenting matters that came to our attention during the course of the audit. And finally, as Rob had mentioned, we conducted a single audit over the grant and loan as it relates to the USDA for the water tower. And for all three of those reports, we expressed an opinion for the financial statements. They were free from material misstatement. It was an unmodified opinion. As far as the report required by governmental auditing standards, we did identify two material weaknesses and one area of noncompliance that we will talk about in a minute. And as far as the single audit report, we expressed an unmodified opinion with respect to compliance with material grant compliance requirements. So here is just explain the results of the audit, just as a brief overview of the financial statements. In the reporting package, as you see, we have two separate sets of financial statements. We have the government-wide financial statements. Those are presented on the full accrual basis of accounting. This is going to capture all long-term assets, all long-term liabilities. So with that being said, the district's net position as of June 30th, 2017 was $2.1 million. This was an increase of roughly $700,000 from the prior year. There are three components of this net position, if you will. Unrestricted net position was considered to be a deficit of $2.4 million. This was primarily due to the recording of net pension liability of roughly $3 million, which was a $435,000 increase from the prior year. And the OPEB obligations under the current, or GASB 45, which is going to be replaced by future GASB pronouncements, was $1.6 million, and that was roughly unchanged. It should be noted, though, that GASB 75, which are new accounting pronouncements for other post-employment benefits, are in effect as of June 30th, 2018, and we expect the liability with respect to OPEB to materially increase this upcoming fiscal year. As far as the fund financial statements, this is presented on the modified accrual basis of accounting. This is very similar to the cash basis of accounting, where you're only going to be reflecting current assets and current liabilities. The main fund presented on these fund basis financial statements are the general fund, which is the main operating fund of the district. The total fund balance for the general fund as of June 30th, 2017 was roughly $1.3 million. Approximately $668,000 of that fund balance was considered unassigned and available for spending. The total general fund balance decreased by roughly $470,000 in the current year. As a comparison to the budgeted decrease in fund balance, which was $748,000, this is a result of favorable variances on the budget to actual, which you'll be able to see in the back of the financial statements there, and also $60,000 worth worth of reconciling items. That would be stabilization fund activity, which is considered the general fund in the fund basis financial statements, but is recorded not in the general fund budget on the required supplementary information. And also the effect of revenue recognition on the modified accrual basis, which is not reflected on the budgetary basis of accounting. And as I had mentioned, that the budgetary schedule is reflected in the back of the financial statements, and there's a reconciliation behind that page showing the differences between what's reported in the general fund and what's reflected on the budgetary comparison schedule. As I had previously mentioned, in addition to the financial statement audit, we performed an audit in accordance with uniform guidance, which is the new term for Circular A-133. We issued an unmodified opinion, which is a clean opinion, as it with respect to material compliance with major federal grant programs. There was only one major federal grant program this year, and that was the USDA grant and loan that was received by the district during the course of the fiscal year. We had one item specifically related to that grant that was not considered material noncompliance. However, it was noncompliance, and that was the establishment of a separate fund for tank maintenance. There needs to be an additional $15,000 to $16,000 appropriated into this fund on an annual basis over the course of the loan for system maintenance. In addition to that, there were two other findings that just related to general grant compliance that were not considered material, but they're still noted in the single audit report. One, in relation to the timeliness of the single audit report, the due date is March 31st, and it's going to be filed, obviously, later than March 31st. The other one had to do with internal control policies and procedures over grant compliance, which is also included in the management letter, and, you know, we recommended to the district to, you know, evaluate whether or not this would be necessary to implement based on the future anticipation of grant income from the federal government. As I had mentioned, we also issue a report on internal control over financial reporting, compliance issues, and other matters. We noted two material weaknesses with respect to the internal controls. One is inherent to the district. It's a lack of segregation of duties, which has been a comment that's been carried forward from the prior years. The other one, we were required to assist the district with reconciling cash between the treasurer's cash book and the general ledger in the beginning of the audit before we actually began audit procedures. However, it should be noted that all the reconciling items were identified with management. It was just a matter of booking those entries accordingly at the end of the fiscal year. However, because of that reason, we had to still issue the material weakness. In addition, we had found that there was noncompliance as it relates to the debt service expenditures, which is reflected in the budget to actual report. And the responses to those comments are also included in that report as well. As always, we issue a management letter. These are just suggestions for improvements over internal control over financial reporting. The material weaknesses that I previously mentioned are included in this management letter, but there are also some other items just as recommendations to enhance internal control over financial reporting.
I have a question.
Yes.
Do you have any suggestions that for the solution of the problem with the accounting system in the water department, other than hiring somebody else to do part of the job?
We had suggested that there are authorizations of the water billings before they're being administered, along with the superintendent authorizing these billings before they are actually billed out, and, you know, more enhanced documentation of turnovers as cash is received from that department. So essentially just, you know, an extra set of eyes looking at bills before they're being administered, okay, along with authorization of turnovers when cash is collected and deposited into the bank.
Okay, great. And any questions?
I do. I have a quick question. Some of the things that I've seen in the some of the weaknesses that I've seen are material weaknesses when it comes to segregation of duties. And I think, as you've been able to find out, we're a very small operation here. So are there any suggestions that you would see based with the staff that we have, or any recommendations on perhaps getting more staff that would allow us to have that segregation of duties?
It's one of those things that needs to be assessed at a practical standpoint. You know, it's one of those comments that we had to include in there because it's the inherent nature of the district.
Correct.
But as I had previously mentioned, as long as there is some sort of oversight over the billing procedures and the cash collection receivers or procedures, having department heads authorizing turnovers before they're remitted over to the treasurer's office, having department heads review the billing schedules before they're going out, having water commissioners authorize those billing commitments before the bills are actually administered. Those are all additional controls that could be implemented to enhance the environment and ultimately enhance the control activities that are currently in place.
Now, the $15,000 to $16,000 per year that mm-hmm. we're supposed to set aside for maintenance of the tank, I mean, we already do maintenance of the tank. I mean, is that a feasible, realistic thing for us to do?
Well, we're required to do it. We're required to do it under provisions of the grant that we accept.
Okay.
So we'll have to do it and just have to ask the water department to identify those maintenance items on the, specifically on the water tank or related items.
To that tank.
To that tank, right. Right. So, I mean, we didn't do it in 17, but we are doing it in 18, and we'll carry on forward.
I just had a question about the the fees for the bank, the fees for the bonds.
Yes.
That's because is that because we left Cape Cod 5 and started using another?
Yes, we have.
Company?
Yes, we have to use an outside. Cape Cod 5 stopped providing that service, and so we had to seek outside help. And Hilltop Securities is one of the ones that we've engaged.
Because I don't believe Cape Cod 5 was charging us.
I think they were doing it gratis, actually. And
so
they found out that was a losing deal.
Yeah.
But they didn't stay in the business, or we would have preferred to stay with them.
Pay well, them.
Yeah, their person retired. So.
Yeah, yes. So.
Yeah. Anything else?
I'm all set.
Anything? Mm-hmm. Thank you very much.
All right.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Good evening.
You too.
Take care.
Mm-hmm. Any public comment? Please try and stay to 3 minutes.
I'll try. Cynthia Gardner, 94 School Street. Since the district and the chief have agreed to open his contract and remove a critical component, the expectation that chief becomes a paramedic, which could impact the residents of the district receiving advanced life support, I feel the situation requires more thought and discussion than has occurred. I would also like to know, has the district spent any funds to date in assisting Chief Rude with obtaining his paramedic, since it is current stipulation of his contract? I would also like to know why Chief Rude requested the commissioners at the last fire commissioners meeting to backdate the amendments to his contract to December 2017. If you choose to eliminate this requirement, why isn't his salary being adjusted accordingly? As a paramedic on the Kootenai Fire Department, one makes 10% more than an EMT. If we adjust his current $130,000 salary by 10%, it would bring his current salary to $117,000 plus his annual increase. I also want to know why he is getting a 2.5% pay increase yearly when his firefighters are only getting 1.5% annually. because firefighters can only accumulate 200 days of sick leave in their current contract. Why can he accumulate 220? When receiving the copy of the contract that I requested from the clerk, I noted that portions of the contract may go against and or may be in conflict with our district bylaws. These areas should be researched and addressed before the Prudential Committee can vote to accept this contract. Also, the residents of the Catuit Fire District during the annual meeting voted unanimously to accept Mass General laws in regards to sick time. If this contract is going to be amended, it would make good fiscal sense to limit the hours of sick time the chief can carry over into the next fiscal year to 40 hours. This would eliminate a potential costly liability to the district in the future. Please send it back to the fire commissioners and ask them to negotiate a fair and reasonable contract or leave the current one in place that was agreed to last year. The district advertised for a fire chief that was a paramedic. Chief Rue chose to apply for the position knowing he was not one. The district chose to hire him with the stipulation that he gets his certification as a paramedic within 2 years, and he agreed. I'd like to mention that within the past 3 years, a firefighter was terminated. He had agreed to, and the commissioners had hired him, only giving him a one-year stipulation to become certified as a paramedic. When he was unable to meet this requirement, they let him go. I am not saying that the situation cannot be worked out with Chief Rude, but the situation is not as easy as eliminating a requirement from his contract and leaving everything else the same. Negotiation requires give and take. Thank you.
Any response to public comment? Seeing none, public comment is closed. Chief Rude, do you wish to talk about, we have an amendment to the employment agreement between the Catuit Fire District and the fire chief. Would you like to explain it? Thank you.
Chief Rude, when I was hired just over a year ago, I did have a required my contract to obtain my paramedic certification. I've completed almost all the classroom portion of that training successfully, and I would be due to start the practical shortly. The practical requires in excess of 500 to 1,000 hours of practical ride time, hospital observation time, over a one-year period. If I continue with this paramedic program, it would mean in excess of 20 hours a week for the next year period that I would be committed to riding on an ambulance somewhere other than Catuit Fire and hospital time at the hospital. I'm honestly not able to complete my administrative duties on a half-time schedule. There's not enough hours in the day to get the job done. Over the last year, we have promoted or created the position of EMS officer. So we have someone functioning in that position. They're maintaining our EMS training certifications. We went from being on probation for EMS to in good standing with the state. So we've increased our training level and ability as far as EMS goes. As far as me acting as a paramedic, I haven't been in the back of the ambulance functioning in any medical capacity in over 5 years. In neighboring departments such as ComFire, they discourage people from maintaining their paramedic after the captain level. So as a captain, you are no longer compensated. You aren't provided training to maintain your medic. It's not something we do. Chiefs are primarily administrative. I've got usually 99% of the time I've got two medics on duty. And then when they go out, I do respond, provide medical attention. I have enough time to get vital signs, get patient information, at which time a mutual aid ambulance shows up with two more paramedics. It's just not part of my duties. It's not what I do. I'd be happy to complete the program, but we're going to need to find some way to complete the duties that I would not have time to complete in the meantime. So,
aside from COM, how do some of the other, how does Barnesville Fire and West Barnesville, are the chiefs paramedics of those particular?
No.
If you know.
Barnesville Fire is an EMT. West Barnesville is an EMT. COM is just an EMT. Hyannis Fire Chief's an EMT. I think Falmouth, I don't know if he's still a paramedic. He was a paramedic at one time, and Bourne Fire Chief was a paramedic at one time. I'm not sure if he still is. These chiefs do not work in the back of the ambulance. I mean, Catuit Fire is smaller. I do go on calls. I go on them frequently. When my three people on duty are out on calls, I'm the next one to go, and I go and I provide medical treatment until a mutual aid ambulance shows up, which is 5 to 10 minutes.
And I'm sorry, how often do you have two paramedics on there?
Two paramedics are scheduled 100% of the time. Occasionally, due to a sick call or something like that, we may end up filling with an EMT, but 99% of the time, there's a second medic on duty. If we don't, we've always got the ability to get a mutual aid medic on the way to the hospital, so they'll grab another medic at Centerville Fire or Mashpee Fire on the way to the hospital.
Thank you.
I have a couple of questions. I guess one is a two-part question, so I'll start with that. Being that I'm new, I'm trying to figure this out. Are there any legal requirements as to the amount of paramedics that we should have based on our size district?
To maintain an ALS certification, we have to have the ability to get two paramedics. So we can staff with one paramedic, and the ability to get it would be getting mutual aid from another department. So we're required to have one paramedic on duty most of the time. We can even drop down to no paramedics on duty if we chose to for limited periods. We don't. We have two paramedics on duty, like I said, 99% of the time to maintain that, and we've always got the ability to get a mutual aid paramedic from a neighboring town. So that's the only legal requirement we have.
So based on what you're saying, we'd be in compliance with that requirement?
We're in compliance, yes.
And the second question that I would have is, obviously this was brought up at the fire district, fire commissioners meeting. How did they feel about the situation? What was their opinion?
Their opinion was, initially, when they advertised this position over a year ago, we didn't have an EMS officer position, and they saw the fire chief as completing those duties. So they thought it was a requirement of the job. In the last year, we've created the EMS officer position with some money that we saved and some unique training changes. So we have someone else covering those responsibilities, and which has worked out very well. Like I said, we've increased our training and our compliance with state EMS protocols. So they figured at this point in time, my duties are 99% administrative. I would not use those skills if I got them, and my time was better spent on managerial tasks for the fire district.
Thank you. I think the comment I would have would be that us being the Prudential Committee, and basically our main objective is to safeguard the finances of the district, but we also wouldn't want to be in contradiction with the determinations of the fire commissioners. So I think if they're in favor of this, and it would make financial sense for us not to pursue this, then I don't have any objections to that.
Okay. I just have one question. Are paramedics required to have a certain number of work hours per year after they have a license?
No, their recertification hours are more than double than EMT, so there would be double the training hours, recertification hours required to maintain it, but there are no,
okay.
You could be a medic and not function in the back of an ambulance for extended periods of time. I mean, would you be competent? And I think you could argue you probably wouldn't be, but there's no requirement that you actually perform skills.
So, and this was vetted through lawyers, so.
Yes, district council approved it, and the fire commissioners also approved it, voted on it, and signed it.
So I'd like to make a motion to accept the amendment to the employment agreement between the Catuit Fire District and the fire chief.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Thank you. Thanks. Okay. So.
You need to sign that?
Yep. The next item is the warrant department water warrant processing. So Don Campbell and I had extensive conversations about this, and then I attended their last meeting. And the fire department is using Secure Networks, which is they're currently processing their warrants by uploading them to this secure network sent to each member of the committee. And they review the warrant, and they write approved or not approved or any questions and send it back. So that's been suggested to the water department, and it seemed to be a suggestion that they thought was a good way to handle it. And that way the warrants from the water department will be getting to the treasurer's office on Tuesday morning.
Weekly?
Weekly.
Okay.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Which will make their job easier, and it also, I don't know if anybody realizes this, but I went over some things with Lisa the other day, and because of the bills only coming every 2 weeks, if not more, payments are crossing. So for some electric bills, you know, you see the cost of the bill, and then under that you would see that there's a surplus, but it wasn't subtracted. So Jim would have to take, you know, what the previous payment was and subtract it by hand at the bottom of the bill so that the correct amount was paid. It's not a good use of anybody's time. So Chief Root is working with Secure Networks to just get any information about any costs related to this. And, you know, hopefully we should, you know, I'd like to see it up and working in a month or 6 weeks if possible. So, okay.
I just wanted to say I wanted to thank everybody who was part of that process, because I know, you know, the fact that we got that done, we changed that to a weekly warrant system, is definitely going to benefit us all based on the conversation that we've had. But I know it was a lot of effort going into a lot of people trying to change processes. But as we saw as part of the audit, that's one of the things that we have to basically adapt and get better at, because, you know, things keep changing as time progresses. So we should definitely have our processes updated.
Everybody following the same process.
Correct. So it was a good team effort, and I just wanted to thank everybody involved.
So, all right. The next is election of the chairman. Nominations.
I nominate Francis Parks.
Second that.
Thank you. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Thanks. So the committee assignments. I've already talked to Lisa, and Lisa's going to be on the
bylaws.
Okay. You're going to get to be an observer this year.
Excellent.
And learn. And I'm going to take care of the policy advisory committee. So that's that. So the next is the space needs project. So
I'm sorry if I can interrupt just quickly. Do you know who else is on those? Who can?
I have a list of people for the water department. I believe Rick Pisano is going to be on policy advisory. I'll find out who's going to be on the bylaws.
Okay.
I think probably
community members.
No. Oh. Yeah. No, I don't have a list
of
those. Kim Malloy has those. Yeah. So I think probably, you know, I think first meetings can be done in the fall in September. Mm-hmm. There's no need to do it in the summertime. So we received back from Brown Lindquist et al. the submittal of owner-architect agreements for the space needs office study for the Kituit Fire District. And it also included one of their contracts.
Yeah.
Did we decide that we could?
Thank you. Sorry.
So did we decide if we could use that, or was the decision that we should?
I'm not sure this is specifically one of theirs. This is one of the AIA contracts that they, if I recall correctly, they weren't wild about. But we had suggested that we were kind of tied to this.
Are we tied to the state contract? That was my question. The one that was in the RFP.
Yeah.
I think the one in the RFP was a little too detailed for what we needed. I think this is more in line with what we're trying to do, in the sense that it's more summarized. But the problem with the AIA is obviously written by their Association of Architects, so it's Protect Architects. So, I mean, there's definitely good language here, but I think maybe with some modifications.
Can I ask, just procedurally, though, can we deviate from what with the original contract that we had included in the packet?
I think.
Or is that something we need to?
Yeah, for the purposes of an RFP or in a bid or whatever, you can put something out there in your advertisement that basically tells everybody the expectations that you have, but it's also used more as let's be able to compare apples to apples, so that everybody submits things and they can say, well, this is what you asked. It may be a little too detailed, but that way nobody says, well, you're asking for this, but of this group, and you're asking for this out of a different group. So the main purpose of the information that's put in the RFP is just so that when it's out to the public, anybody who wants to put its submittal through knows kind of what it's expected. But at the end of the day, it's just used as a way to compare apples to apples so that everybody puts in something along the same lines. So if you just leave it open and do it one line, say we're looking for submittals to do a feasibility study at the Kootenai Fire District. You can get 10 proposals and all look different. And one may say, well, we're just going to do a feasibility study that includes assessing the condition of the existing mm-hmm. building. Another one can say the building and the lot. And so you, to avoid those discrepancies, that's why you write the RFP the way it is. But at the end of the day, it's just for comparison purposes. So we should do what we think is in the best interest of the district.
Are you comfortable in your prior experience reviewing the AIA contract?
Absolutely.
From our perspective as opposed to the pro architect?
Yeah, I think if in some way we can continue this, then I'll get some time and just review it and make some comments.
We need to also, Mark Boudreau needs to mm-hmm. review it also.
Well, maybe if we have a go at it first and then submit it with recommended changes to Mark, I'm just trying to save time. And rather than have him look at it, make changes, then we have recommended changes. He then has to look at our recommended changes.
Yeah. Because, like, for example, there's, architect's responsibilities, owner's responsibilities. I would say that it's kind of, we would want to dictate what the owner's responsibilities are and the architect's responsibilities, not the other way around. Mm-hmm. We're the client, so we should be able to have more of a say about that. And then there's, claims and disputes and mediation, arbitration. These are contract language that, in case there's any issues, then that guides how we're going to proceed. So we would like to be able to have a say in that instead of having them dictate that. So at the end of the day, I think just reviewing those things, if they're okay with us, then that's fine. If not, then just making comments and amending that. So we can use this as a basis.
Okay. Okay, great. So, all right. So I'll let Ms. Giardi know that we're working on it. Mm-hmm. I did want to say one other thing about in the discussion with the water department, the treasurer's office. We've talked about getting a postage meter for the treasurer's office, which would solve, which means that the lien process could be, that's done by the water department, could be more efficient, that they could come over and use the meter for the certification of the letters, as opposed to standing at the office and ending up with a sheet that long. So, now, Mike, you sent me the thing about Combis and the three.
Correct.
The three postage meter companies that were on there. Mm-hmm. Do we have to use some of those three, or?
If you use a statewide contract, you would have to use one of those three. And there's also specific tasks. I think the second one can only do certain things. The first one and the third one could do all the services advertised in the contract. So there's specific rules, but once you do that, then the procurement's done. So you can procure those services legally without having to go out to bid or anything.
Okay.
And I think the only thing they request is for us to get quotes from those vendors, which is good business practice anyway. So.
Okay.
But there's also other services out there. I've been doing some research. There's other departments out there, municipal departments that use I think Pitney Bowes as well. But somehow somebody, I think, mentioned to me that they had it even cheaper than, I think, the statewide contract. So I'm doing more research on that, okay. And I'll get back to you.
Okay.
Once I get something more concrete. Because that's definitely something that's going to help.
Yes.
I mean, you can go from getting a scale, getting, what do you call those machines that the sealer, the envelope, it does it all for you. Yeah. Or you can just, you know, file everything online and just print your stamps and send it off. So there's different tiers and different things. So I think we got to find a compromise and a balance that works for them at a good price.
Okay, so. Great. Thank you. All right. So the only other item is the minutes. So the minutes of May 11th and May 21st is before you were on the,
my time.
Before your time.
I saw Stan. I was like, is that a typo? No, yeah. It's before me.
So,
yeah, I had a chance to review them and they were fine.
So I make the motion to accept the Prudential Committee minutes of May 11th, 2018 and May 21st, 2018.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. And then the others are. So. All
right. I was not present for that.
You weren't present for that, so. Okay. So this is the minutes of the June 5th, 2018, and June 8th, 2018.
Mm-hmm. I reviewed the June 8th. Let me see if I have the June 5th. Let's see the June 5th. You have it? I'll check it quickly.
Won't take you but a minute.
Yeah. Yep. Okay. So, could I have a motion to accept the minutes of the 5th of June, 2018, and June the 8th of June, 2018.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. And then this, Lisa was away for this one, the June 28th meeting. Did you have a chance to read those?
Let me see. I have a lot of paperwork here. Pretty sure I read all of the minutes, but I don't have that one. Just let me check, sorry.
A long one.
Motion to accept the 28th of June 2018 Prudential Committee minutes.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Great. So that's everything. I'll accept a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Thank you.
Thank you.